is made possible in part by a grant from the Art Mart in the Lincoln Square Mall, Urbana. The Art Mart is pleased to support public radio in East Central Illinois. AM 580 thanks Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors for its support of Focus 580. Overhead Doors is pleased to support public radio in Central Illinois on behalf of its customers and business associates.
Good morning, this is Focus 580, our morning telephone talk show. My name is Jack Brighton, sitting in for your regular host David Inge, who we gave the day off. Glad you could listen. During this first hour of the show, we will take your questions on home repair and maintenance issues, something we do once a month, always on the third Monday of each month at 10 o'clock, with Hank Spies of the Spies Home Inspection Service here in Champaign. He's seen just about every kind of situation you can imagine, and he's also a former researcher here at the University of Illinois, so he has a wide base of knowledge on which to draw to answer your questions. That's the point of this hour. If you have home maintenance questions, a project that you're contemplating maybe as the weather gets warmer coming up here, looking ahead optimistically, or just issues that you're dealing with right now. If you would like to join us, all you have to do is call us. Around Champaign-Urbana, the number 333-9455. That's 333-WILL, if that makes it easier to remember. We also have a toll-free line anywhere you can hear us around the Midwest, or actually anywhere in the U.S. if you're listening on the Internet. That number is 800-222-9455. Questions on home maintenance for Hank Spies are welcome, 333-WILL. And 800-222-WILL. Good morning, Hank.
Good morning.
Glad to have you with us as always.
Always glad to be here.
Well, we have actually several callers already lined up, so let's go ahead and take some questions from listeners.
All right.
Okay, we have someone from Piatt County on line number four first. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Good morning.
Yes.
I have recently bought an older home that was built in 79, I believe, and I'm in a small town that has septic instead of sewer system. Mm-hmm. And so I have several questions about that. Number one, if I'm planning any landscaping, should I not landscape near a septic area? The grass grows rather brown over the septic area.
Well, generally speaking, it will over the tank itself.
Mm-hmm.
Then as far as the disposal field is concerned, we always have the famed Irma Bombeck, the grass is always greener over the septic tank. It isn't over the tank itself simply because the dirt is not deep enough to hold enough moisture.
Okay.
But it will do very nicely over the disposal field.
Okay, and then my next question is, I have never had any worries about it, but a neighbor had to, what is it, did they dig it out or
well,
what goes
okay,
wrong with it?
Remember that a septic tank has to be pumped periodically because there is an accumulation of mineral non-digestible materials in the bottom. And if those non-digestible materials build up to the point where they go out into the field, they may then block the pores in the soil, and you have to replace the field.
Uh-huh.
Now, that we're looking at $2,500 to $3,000 to do that, whereas you can get the thing pumped for about an average of $100, plus or minus 25. And that ought to be done every 7 to 10 years, unless you have a garbage disposal, in which case it should be done every 3 to 5 years. And you, when you landscape over it and so on, remember that they've got to dig down and get the lid off periodically for that cleaning.
So you should leave access to your backyard. Mine's in the backyard.
Yeah. Well, okay. It's a matter of they just run a hose back there
okay.
to pump it out, so it's not a big problem there.
And then my last question is, would that have any factor in this? There are two baths, full baths in the house, and one stool is always clean, and the other stool has iron deposits, and we're in an area that has a lot of iron. But that wouldn't have any correlation with
No, that would have only correlated with the water supply. And I'm wondering if one of them may be hooked to the water softener.
Okay. Okay. And would you recommend if the house seems very adequate and it has a new roof and everything, do people just have home inspections for problems, future problems?
Yes. We often, most of our work is for people who are buying houses. As we put it, we try to tell the people all the things the realtor wishes they didn't know.
And how much would that cost than just to have an inspection in general if it's just a one-story ranch?
Well, it varies with inspectors, and I think there are 10 inspectors in Champaign County or something like that. Generally speaking, we're running $200 to $300.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your information.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Bye.
Our lines are basically full. Actually, we have one line open. Let's go on and talk with some more listeners. Next up, someone in Mattoon on line number one. Good morning.
Mr. Spieth.
Yes.
In a 50-year-old home, one bathroom has a silent flush that has been there all that time, a silent flush toilet. And in the last year or so, it has developed a little bloop, bloop on occasion.
This is during the flush, or is this
as it sits there, it develops a little bloop, bloop.
Well, probably you are losing the seal between the flush valve and the seat and draining the water down a little bit, and then it's suddenly adding a little bit of water back again.
Oh, well, that's a kind of a simple thing then.
Yes.
Oh, well, I appreciate your answer. Thank you so much.
Okay, mm-hmm. Thanks for the call. All right, well, we'll go next to another listener in Lafayette on line number two. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hello. Could you finish the point about the different effect, whether or not your toilet is connected with soft water?
Well, very often the water from a water softener will cause more staining than the regular water does. It has less iron in it, but somehow or other it picks up something, and we very often will get more staining with softened water than we do with hard water.
Okay. What I wanted to ask is, the furnace here has electronic filtering, and yet the house still gets pretty dusty, despite my cleaning out the filters every couple of months. Can you suspect what's going on here?
How old is the house?
50 years.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised that in the period of time before the electronic filter went in, and I'm sure it wasn't put in there when the house was built, that we may have considerable dust accumulation in the ductwork. And you might want to consider the possibility of having the ducts cleaned.
Is that usually a worthwhile project?
Not necessarily. It depends on just how picky you are about the dust sitting around and how often you're willing to dust. There is on our website, the WILL website as well as mine, a link to a publication about should I have my ducts cleaned. And you might give that a try.
Is there any value in what I see advertised as little thin filter pads that you fasten onto the warm air registers?
Probably not. The filter, your electronic filter, is doing a much better job than those ever would.
Okay, and yet it's still blowing in.
Well, I don't know. There may be some there. A lot of times we run into problems with dirt and debris accumulation actually during construction that goes down. And there are a couple of companies now that sell closure units for the builders to put over the duct openings while they are constructing. But it's amazing how much things like plaster dust and drywall dust and so on can end up. You know, it's a hole in the floor. The guys cleaning it up sweep the stuff down the hole. And while this is unfortunate, we know it happens.
So you think it's dirt in the duct that needs cleaning?
Probably.
Okay.
Probably.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks for the call. Quick follow-up, and then we'll get on to some more callers. Is there a danger of stirring up more if it's not done right, if you don't clean the ducts correctly?
Oh, not really. Yeah. Generally speaking, they use a very high-powered vacuum system. Mm-hmm. And some of the people who do it, when they finish, pull a unit through that sprays something on to anchor what they missed. But probably it is not going to cause a problem.
Okay. Let's go on next to some more listeners. Next up, someone on line number three in Urbana. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hello.
Yes.
Hey, Steve?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, good. I have a roof question today. I have a house that's probably 80 years old. It's one of those older Urbana houses, a two-story and attic upstairs. And 20 years ago, we put bats up there as insulation.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're thinking we'll make a room up there, maybe put a dormer out. It's a hip roof. And mm-hmm. put one little dormer out in one direction. And I'm guessing we'll pick up all that insulation. And what do? Do we nail it up against the roof line there? And
no, when you kick this out, they will have to insulate the walls and the roof of the dormer.
Mm-hmm.
The one question that you want to be sure and ask is the ceiling framing strong enough to carry the weight of a room up there?
Mm-hmm.
Because many times the ceiling framing is relatively light and certainly was not ever intended to have an occupied space above it.
Uh-huh.
So you may have some sag on the second floor.
Oh, dear. Well, that can be braced up? Or
It has to be done, and what I'm saying is that it may not be as simple a job as you are anticipating.
Oh, never is it?
No.
Okay. But as far as the insulation goes, could we just leave what's there and put
absolutely.
Over it and then put more insulation up in the ceiling?
Right.
Okay. All right, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks very much for the call. We're talking this morning with Hank Spies of the Spies Home Inspection Service here in Champaign-Urbana, taking your questions on home maintenance, fixing things around the house. We have several callers waiting and at least one line open. You are welcome to join us. The number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll free anywhere else you hear us, 800-222-9455. We'll go next to a listener in Bethany on line number 4. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Glad to hear your program. Mr. Speaks, as long as you're on septic tanks, could you give some recommendations on what to use to clean the toilet bowl in the bathtub that drain into it, and maybe some ideas on the different bacterial agents you can put down in there to try to help?
Well, the bacterial agents are virtually all a waste of money.
Yeah, really?
Yes. U.S. Public Health Service has tested, I think, virtually all of them, and none of them really do anything that is useful. The only agent that I find putting down a toilet that would help is if you have a root problem in the septic drain lines.
Yeah.
Put down about a pound of copper sulfate every 6 months, and this will keep the roots out.
Okay.
But believe me, there is plenty of bacteria in what goes down the toilet. Okay. You don't have to add any.
So what can I do to clean things without possibly...
Well, the quantity that you use for cleaning purposes is not going to affect the tank significantly. What we don't want to do is, for instance, dump an RV holding tank down there, because the chemicals in the RV holding tank very possibly could kill the bacteria in the septic tank. But otherwise, any of the products, you know, okay, so you use some chlorine bleach products or whatever. That's such a small quantity, and compared to the capacity of the tank, I've never run into any problem with that.
Okay. So any of the caustic, like Santa Flush or something?
Yep. That doesn't hurt a thing.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks for the call. Let's see. We have someone next on line number 1, Champagne on a cell phone, I believe. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a question. I was a builder in the South, but I never ran into this situation. We're going to put a covered porch and a second floor on our house here in Champaign. And how the covered porch will, of course, will be unheated space, and there will be a bedroom upstairs. Of course, my wife's working on the upstairs floor plan. There may be a bathroom over that area.
Mm-hmm.
Floor joists will most likely be 2x12s. How do you handle insulating that area and sealing it so that that room won't be cold or the plumbing?
Well, you want to get quite a bit of insulation, minimum 6 inches, and it should be with the vapor barrier against the floor of the upstairs room.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the vapor barrier always goes to the warm side.
Okay.
And you can seal the thing off. That's not really a problem, as long as you have at least 6 inches of insulation in there.
What do you think about foam, sprayed foam?
Excellent product, just a little bit more expensive than some of the other solutions. But it does provide the vapor barrier, so that actually it's a very, very good product. And I have no problems with that at all.
So people that have done this have the rooms aren't cold or...
No, you've still got to get some heat out there, preferably along the outside wall.
Right.
You've got to have to run some ductwork over and bring it to the outside. Being second floor, you may be bringing the heat in at the ceiling. It's particularly important that the floor be heavily insulated. Ceiling heat works fine when you're over a heated space, but when you're over a cold space, you've got to really have a lot of insulation under it.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thanks very much for the call, and good luck. You were telling me earlier about a new kind of insulation that you saw an advertisement for that was a...
Yes, this was ecologically friendly insulation. Yeah. It was 70% duck feathers, 10% wool, and 20% fabric scraps of a variety that would melt together and hold the whole works together. And I'm not quite sure how successful this is going to be. It's just one of those news releases that came across.
Well, it'd be a great story to tell folks about, you know, the addition that you put on, insulated with duck feathers, I guess. I don't know.
Where they're all coming from, I don't know. I expect to see a franchise for Kentucky Fried Duck one of these days if we have a real need for them.
Okay, well, we've got several people waiting to talk with us. Let's go next to a listener in Charleston on line number 2. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Happy February, Mr. Spies.
Thank you.
I've got a couple of questions, and they're both related to the two previous questions. I live in a large, old house, and we've been putting insulation in the walls as best we can as we work through it, but we replaced the furnace in the summer of 1990.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually have two stories. I have one furnace in the basement and one in the attic.
Mm-hmm.
But it just doesn't seem to be able to keep up with these real cold temperatures here. And it's a Train XL80. I think it was a high. It says high efficiency on it.
No, it's 80% efficiency is about right.
Okay. And I'm just wondering if it's maybe time to move up to another furnace or...
No, I think it's a matter of insulation and where the outlets for it are.
Yeah. Well, that's, I think, a problem, too, with the furnace in the attic. It's, you know, trying to force this hot air down.
Well, that's true. And as I say, this usually works fairly well as long as you're over a heated space.
Ah.
So okay. We oftentimes do that on the second floor.
Yeah.
But if you're over an unheated space, then bringing heat in at the ceiling does not work well. The one thing that you can do is to put in one of these ceiling paddle fans and set it so that it blows up instead of down and put it on its lowest speed, and this circulates the air vertically in the room.
Right. We have a number of ceiling fans in the bedrooms up there, so we'll just need to turn them on in the winter.
Yes, but turn on the lowest speed and set them to blow up, not down.
Right. Put it on reverse.
Yeah.
Another problem I've just been having this winter, and I don't know if it's weather related or not, is it seems I am plunging toilets like two or three times a week, and I don't know if that's something I should call the city sewer maintenance people or a plunger, a plumber for. Or...
Well, as long as just plunging the toilet solves the problem, it probably isn't with the city sewer.
Okay.
It is probably within your own house someplace, and you're probably getting a buildup somewhere, and probably a plumber would be the best answer for that. I doubt very much that you are freezing a drain line and causing the problem.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
See you in March.
Thanks very much, and good luck with that. We'll go next to a listener in Urbana on line number 3. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hello. I have two questions. The first is, do you need to cover your outdoor air conditioner unit in the wintertime?
No.
You don't?
No.
So that's good.
If you want to do anything with it, you might put a lid over it so that snow sliding off the roof won't go down into it, but do not wrap one in plastic.
Okay, good. My second question is about paint. I have 2-quart cans of paint that are probably 30 years old, maybe older, And every time I open them up, there's this oil on top, and there's no skin at all, and they're just great to use. I have another can of paint. It's a gallon can of paint that I got a couple years ago. And even if it's just closed up for a couple of days, the next time I open, there's a skin on the top. So what is the difference?
Completely different paint formulations. They were putting a lot of different things in today than they were 30 years ago.
It seems like it's so much better 30 years ago.
Yes, but it was probably, today you probably couldn't afford to buy that paint.
If I put some, like, linseed oil in that paint, would that keep it from making the skin on top?
No, it would just provide you with a linseed oil skin.
Oh. Okay, well, that's all I wanted to know.
Best thing you can do is probably put some saran wrap over it, push it down right onto the paint surface.
Mm. Well, I did that with a piece of aluminum foil, but it just didn't seem to work.
Yeah, well, as I said,
try saran wrap.
Try saran wrap.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thanks very much for the call. Okay, we have several callers waiting, and at least one line open if you'd like to join us. We're talking with Hank Spies of the Spies Home Inspection Service, taking your questions on home maintenance, home repair, various issues related to taking care of your house. 333-9455 around Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free anywhere else, 800-222-9455. Next up, a listener in Charleston on line number 4. Good morning.
Good morning. In keeping with, sounds like, today's theme, I also have a question about insulation. Mm-hmm. I'd like you to address the problem of trying to insulate walls. What material would be best? My husband and I have a little, I think they call it a floor and a half, arts and crafts house that was built mm-hmm. in 1919 and with balloon construction, and I don't think there's anything in the walls. And we have talked about this for a couple of years and have not come up with a solution that seems that we like. So if you could address that, I'm going to have to hang up and tend to the baby, and I will listen. Thank you.
Okay. Well, basically, it's a matter of blowing the walls full of insulation. Now, the fact you mentioned it was balloon framed creates one problem, and that is when you try and blow insulation into the walls, because of the framing, there's nothing to keep it there, and some of the insulation is going to blow back between the floors. So it may be necessary for the installer to go in and use some foam or something or other to block off that opening between the floors for when you're blowing. It could be either cellulose or rock wool. Cellulose is probably finer, will probably blow in better around wires and plugs and this kind of thing than the longer fibers of the rock wool. Theoretically, we are supposed to have a vapor barrier on the warm side. However, in a house of that age, there's usually enough coats of paint on it that provides a pretty good vapor barrier. So that does not seem to be a problem. So I don't see any reason why you couldn't blow the walls with it, but as you're certainly going to have to do something about the balloon framing to keep it from blowing back between the floors, or you're going to use 1.5 times as much insulation as you might have otherwise. And if you blow it in tight, it doesn't settle particularly. So I don't think there should be a real problem with that.
Is there, aside from the cost factor of the extra insulation going between the floors, is there any other problem with that?
No, not really. Okay. It's the fact that you can't pack it as well because you're not into a confined space, and we run into more problems with it settling in the walls because we can't blow to the same density.
Mm-hmm. So you want to have some kind of internal pressure in the wall to stop the
right,
insulation.
Yeah. Right. I've opened walls that have been blown for 20 years or so, and if there were just a tightly enclosed wall, it settled maybe a couple of inches. One that was not, it settled a couple of feet.
Oh, wow. Okay, hope that helps. We'll go on next to a listener in Champaign on line number 2. Good morning, you're on Focus 580.
Thank you. I had a question. I have a 10-year-old home. My attic is insulated sufficiently well. It has a ridge vent and soffit vents. They're uncovered and they work very well. Would I harm that system if I put additional venting in the roof to keep it a little cooler in the attic?
You really shouldn't need it. If you've got vents in the soffit plus a ridge vent, that's probably as good insulation or ventilation as you're going to get.
Okay. I wouldn't reduce the temperature by adding additional vents then?
Probably not very much. Okay. Generally speaking, the attic temperature in the summertime should be about 15 degrees warmer than outdoors.
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks for the call. Would maybe a fan be of help in that
I
situation?
Doubt that it would save. It would, if you've got good insulation in the attic floor, the savings probably wouldn't be enough to pay for the fan and running it.
Okay. Very good. We'll go next to listener in Savoy on line number 3. Good morning. You're on Focus.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I read in some winterization-type literature that I should wrap my central air conditioning unit. I'm interested in if you could please tell me why you think it should not be covered completely.
If you're going to cover it, it would have to be a canvas, not plastic, because we don't want to keep moisture in it.
Okay.
You can significantly reduce the life of the outdoor unit by wrapping it tightly in plastic because you can't keep it all the moisture out from the bottom when you can't let it out. And basically what we need to do is keep it ventilated.
All right, great. Thank you.
So the idea is just basically to keep debris off it and that kind of thing.
Yes, yes. Yeah. If you have one that's open on the top, fasten a piece of plywood or something or other over the top so the snow doesn't come in from the top, but don't wrap the thing.
Okay. Let's see. Next up is someone in Urbana on line number 1. Good morning.
Hi. I've talked with you before about the old farmhouse my husband's family has in Ohio, and it's used intermittently and is on a septic tank. So I can't use, because it's used intermittently, I can't use your 7 to 10 year rule very well for pumping out the septic tank. Is there a way to tell when it might need to be pumped out other than just your calculation?
Well, basically, if you can find the lid to it, take the lid off and measure the sediment in the bottom. The sediment shouldn't be more than a third of the depth of the tank.
Okay.
And generally speaking, if you can just take a stick and wrap a cloth around it, you can shove it down and you can tell where the sediment level is when you pull it back out.
Okay. My second question is, are there alternatives to water softeners that use salt? It doesn't seem to me to be a good idea to be dumping salt in the water system. And it would seem to me that I'm guessing that it adds sodium to your drinking water. If you
Yes, it does. There are a few in the market that use potassium rather than sodium. The operating cost is a little bit higher. But people who have problems with high sodium in their drinking water have a couple of choices, one of which is to have a drinking water tap that is not softened at the kitchen sink or whatever, or a reverse osmosis purification system that will take all of this stuff out. And I know a number of people do that. Among other things, they claim that the coffee tastes a lot better that way. Mm-hmm. Not being a coffee drinker, I can't tell you.
Is the reverse how expensive is the reverse osmosis compared to the...
Oh, you're probably looking at around $300 on a reverse osmosis unit. And it will waste about 2 gallon of water for every gallon that it produces. Mm-hmm. And you do have a semi-permeable membrane in it that has to be replaced every 3 to 5 years.
Waste 2 gallons of water for every one it produces. That's interesting.
Yes, because what you're doing is getting the water to go through this semi-permeable membrane, and it goes into a separate tank. It's a rather slow process, so they put about a 1 or 2 gallon tank under the sink, and then the water, the purified water, goes into that. But as I say, we'll take about 2 or 3 gallon of well water to produce 1 gallon of purified water.
And tell me again where the wasted water goes?
Down the drain.
Down the drain? Okay, so it goes back in the system, whatever the system
is. Septic, whatever.
And you said how often does the membrane need to be replaced?
Oh, 3 to 5 years.
How expensive is that?
Probably about $100.
So then you have to factor in the cost of the salt. Okay. That's the alternative. Thanks a bunch.
Okay.
Thanks
for
the call. So the reverse osmosis system would be something that would fit under a given sink. So you
yes.
can have it for drinking water or whatever.
Right, right. And it doesn't produce enough fast enough to use as a general water supply.
Okay. Good. Well, we have several callers waiting. We'll go next to a listener in Homewood on line number 4. Good morning.
Yeah, hi. Good morning. Two questions, one plumbing, one heating. First off is, what's the answer to not having to wait for your hot water to come out of the faucet in the morning?
Well, you have to put in a loop system. In other words, you run your hot water piping in a loop and back into the bottom of the water heater again. And generally speaking, because hot water is lighter than cold water, you will get some gravity circulation within the system, or you can put a pump on it.
Okay. Is that a special water heater that allows you to do that?
No. No, any water heater will do that. You just hook it into where the drain valve is on the bottom, hook your return line to the drain valve's connection.
So you need extra pipes then?
That's right. You have duplicate piping.
Okay, so that's kind of impractical unless you're building new.
Right.
Okay, the heating question is, my gas provider sends out a monthly newsletter, and in there I often see ads for geothermal furnaces. Can you comment on the pros and cons of those things? I've noticed them in southern Illinois, and I don't see any up where I'm at.
Well, okay. The con is cost.
Yeah.
They are significantly more expensive than anything else. They do run on electricity. It much depends upon what your electrical rate is, but what they do is extract heat from the soil, or water as the case may be, and discharge that into the house. In the summertime, they extract heat from the house and run it back into the soil or water source, whatever you have. There are two different ways of doing it. One, you can bury a series of loops of pipe, 8 feet or so deep, or you can run vertical wells and put a loop of pipe down the well and pick up or discharge the heat that way. Basically, it works very much like your air conditioner, except that it can work both directions. Generally speaking, the operating cost is significantly lower, but again, this varies with gas and electricity costs.
How big if you buried the pipes in the yard, how big a field would you need there?
Oh, you're probably going to need a couple hundred feet of loop.
Okay, and how would a well be?
Well, down to the water table, just like you're drilling a water well.
Okay, so like if you did a sand point or something like that?
Well, again, you have to put a loop down. It has to be a drilled well so you can put a loop down.
Okay.
And if you have a body of water, you can run it out into the lake. Pick up your heat and discharge it that way, as long as the lake is at least 8 feet deep.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks for the call. So you'd have to really calculate the cost and payback period and so
yes.
forth based on a number of factors.
And as I say, you're using electrical energy instead mm-hmm. of gas energy, and since most of our electricity is generated from natural gas these days, the ecological aspects are not that much different.
Okay. Well, let's see. We've got several callers waiting, and I believe line number two is next. Someone on a cell phone here. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. I have an old house built in 1880 with virtually no insulation in the attic at all. I had an estimate for blowing-in insulation. It was very, very high, like $6,000 or $7,000. But I'm wondering, in your guest's opinion, if that wouldn't be worth it to offset the energy costs.
That price is ridiculous. Find a different contractor.
Okay.
Generally speaking, where are you located?
I'm located in Champaign, from Westside Park, one of those old homes there.
Right. You should be able to get 8 inches of insulation blown in for about 35 cents a square foot.
Okay. So that would probably make it practical to do that.
Very much so. Very much so.
Would you give me the cost again, the estimate again?
Oh, probably about 35 cents a square foot.
Square foot. Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
And if you have problems getting a decent bid, give me a call at my office, and I'll tell you at least one source to check.
Okay, Mr. Spies. Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call. We are speaking with Hank Spies this morning of the Spies Home Inspection Service, taking your questions on home repair and maintenance. Any questions you have are welcome. The number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL if you match the letters with the numbers. We also have a toll-free line, and that is 800-222-222. 9455. And let me also mention for folks, if you want more information, you can look at Hank Spies' website, which is simply www.hankspies.com. It also has his phone number and various information about home maintenance issues. And if you want to get in touch with him, you can certainly do so that way as well. Meanwhile, we have several callers waiting. We'll go next to someone in Lickskill, Indiana, on line number 3. Good morning.
Yeah, hello. I thought I'd missed you this time. You figured you'd be on the 9th instead of the 16th. But walking outside past the window, I heard your voice. I've got a question here. I called you a while back about removing tongue and groove flooring, and you mentioned a couple of things, and I've now found them, a flooring removal bar and a shingler's shovel. Now, the flooring removal bar sounds like what you had advocated, but I can't find a picture of it anywhere. And it will cost me about $90. The shingler shovel will cost me at least $50. And an Amish man recommended using a flat bar. Now, my question is, with any of these, is there a certainty that I can get up that tongue and groove without tearing it up?
You're going to tear up some. I don't think there's any question that you will break some.
Okay.
But you should be able to get, I think the removal bar is probably a better bet.
Well, that sounded like it. And you said when it's a V, it fits over the joist and kind of long and has a long handle.
Right.
Okay.
It's like a fork that fits, you get one piece out and you set this on the joist. It has a set of prongs that go under the remaining pieces, and you can jack them out.
Yeah, and should you go from a particular side since the nails are in at a slant?
Probably you're going to want to go from the tongue side.
Okay. All right. Gotcha. Well, that's what I wondered, because I'm wondering if it's going to be worth it, you know, to tear up this stuff if I can't use it and spend this much money for a removal bar.
Yeah.
You think a flat bar will work?
It can, yeah. It's a removal bar is a little bit easier. You might check one of the local tool rental places and see if they won't rent you one instead of having to buy one.
Okay, they don't even have them in the catalog. So I've never heard of them, far as I can find out. I appreciate that very much. That's what I wanted to know, Hank.
Okay, thanks
a lot. All right, thanks for the call. Sounds like a big project.
Yes.
I've never removed a floor before. Is this a fairly typical way of those things being put together?
Yeah, reasonably so, yeah.
Because in a lot of older houses, you never know what you're going to find when you start.
That's true. And as I say, I'm not about to say you're not going to ruin some flooring, because you will.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's see. Next up is a listener on line number 1 in Urbana. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering about fans in rooms for circulating the heat and cooling. And we're building a new house, and it's got a rather large room, about 6,000 cubic feet. And I was wondering, what is sufficient fan power, I guess, is what I want to say. We're debating whether I'm having one or two fans, and wondering what you had to say about that. And also, how far off of a 18-foot ceiling would you put a down rod on a fan?
I would probably bring it down to about 10 feet.
And you put an 8-foot rod on there?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay. But also, I was just wondering, how do you know when you have sufficient circulation to take care of the room?
Well, basically what we're trying to do is mix the air in the room, and probably without providing a heavy draft.
Yeah.
The idea that you can take this big fan, move lots of air, and blow it down at you in the summertime doesn't always work nearly as well, because remember, you're taking the warm air off the ceiling and blowing that down to you.
Mm-hmm.
So that basically what we're trying to do is get the vertical circulation. I presume that you have your cooling coming in at floor level?
I believe it comes in at the floor and also off the ceiling.
Okay. So we're just basically trying to get some circulation. And you want to minimize draft, we want something that will do it at a fairly slow airspeed. So we're probably looking at something like a 52-inch diameter fan, which is a fairly common size for paddle fans. And I wouldn't worry about power. I've never seen one of them run out of power.
Well, I'm just wondering if it's enough to stir the air to mix up 6,000 cubic feet is one fan or two fans?
Probably two.
Probably two?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks so much for the call. We have several lines open now, actually for the first time in this hour. If you'd like to join us, any questions for Hank Spies of the Spies Home Inspection Service about fixing things around the house, if you'd like to join us, the number to call, 333-9455. That's around Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free anywhere else, 800-222-9455. Our lines have been pretty much full for the hour, so if you've been waiting, then maybe now you could try again. We'll go next to someone in Champaign on line number two. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hi. I'm Mr. Spies. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thanks. First of all, thanks for the program. I've got a gutter on the north side of the house, and as often happens this time of year, it's full of ice and sometimes liquid, and when it's got liquid, it leaks. And it's a segmented gutter. It's, in other words, the aluminum is joined together.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, it is not leaking, or at least the drips don't come at the segments, but precisely halfway in between, then falls on the cold concrete and creates a glacier. So the question is, where is the leak coming from? Is it being siphoned along the back someplace, or?
I would guess it was, because it should be one piece of aluminum. There shouldn't be any joint there unless it's running along the bottom of the gutter.
It's not obvious if it is.
Mm-hmm.
I've been up there at the point of the leak, and
now, quite often what happens is the thing sags, and then you'll get some leakage over the back and between the gutter and the fascia.
Okay, so the first approximation when the weather moderates is try and get up there and what, seal the seams? Internal?
Yeah, seal the seams and make sure that it's level, because I'm suspecting that the thing is sagging in the middle.
Probably. How do you level it?
New gutter hangers.
Oh. All right.
The hangers used by many of the installers are not particularly strong. There are some good ones on the market, but they're about 75 cents a piece, and obviously the guy who's installing thousands of feet of gutter is not interested in 75 cent a piece gutter hangers.
Okay, but if I at least make for a good seal at the seams, that should...
That should help. The other thing is, remember that the back of the gutter should tuck under the drip edge.
Yeah, it does, as best I recollect.
Okay, that's very good.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks so much for the call. We'll go next to a listener in rural Champaign County on line number one. Good morning.
Good morning. Hank, we've had a new house built recently, and the hardwood floors throughout, which we have pretty much throughout the house, have cupped, and in a couple places there's a bit of a wave. Is there any remedy for this? I noticed...
on a crawl space?
Pardon?
Is this on a crawl space?
Yes, it's on a crawl space.
It sounds to me as though you have a wet crawl space.
Well, no, that's not the case, because we actually dug a gravel trench in front of the house that drains down to the river, so that the 2 4-inch tiles are well below.
Okay,
these.
Now do you have a plastic ground cover over 100%
yes.
of the surface in
yes,
the crawl space?
Yes, we have that taped and glued to the blue board insulation on the inside of the poured concrete crawl space.
Okay.
Now this happened not too long after they put it in.
Mm-hmm. Well, basically what happens when it cups is the fact that the house is drier than it is in the crawl space, so that the top surface of the wood shrinks more than the bottom surface does.
Well, we went to great pains to do the crawl space. We've got a tile inside and out. We've got
mm-hmm.
two sump wells. They've never operated. We were concerned that as soon as they got the shell up and the roof on and the walls enclosed, they put the hardwood floor in. Before the heat was in, they put the hardwood floor in before the drywall was in, so all that drywall mud, could that have been a source? Could have been a wet deck?
It's possible that if the deck is wet, that yes, that can cause cupping.
But if the drywall would be inconsequential when that dries?
I would think so. But if they had the deck down and it rained quite a bit during construction.
For at least 2 months, 2.5 months.
Yeah. Okay. Well, they should have waited till that deck dried down before they put the hardwood in.
I see. And is there a way of drying it?
At this point, it's probably dry, but the damage has already been done.
Yeah, but I meant before the hardwood floor went in.
Sure, put some heat in it.
Put some heat in it. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that was the advice of the installer of the hardwood floor to get the furnace in, or the heat in first, but they didn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, well, we're kind of heartbroken about it.
Yeah.
Now, if that is sanded, and it would take, you know, it's cupped a bit, I understand on a hardwood floor you can only sand it so many times.
Yeah, usually twice.
Usually.
The main thing is how much you have to sand, to the extent that we don't want to thin the edge of the groove section.
Uh-huh.
Otherwise, it will split off.
Oh, I see. And that's where it's swelled. It's mm-hmm. on the edges where they join is where it's gotten, where it's enlarged
right.
and protruded up.
And if you sand that back level, then it can leave that thing narrow enough that it will start splitting off.
I see. I was hopeful that might be the fix. We weren't looking forward to moving everything out of the house, but we really need to do something. It's just annoying every time you look at the floor to see these cupped wood, beautiful wood that's cupped.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it was your problem was a wet deck from the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. Wouldn't the builder have known that, or? I guess
he should have.
Yeah. Okay. No way of telling. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Okay.
All right, thanks for the call. Sorry we don't have better news there. We'll continue on here. We have a couple extra minutes here because the markets are closed for the President's Day. So we'll go till about a minute after 11. We've got several callers waiting, and I believe next is Champagne, caller on line number 3. Good morning.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes. I have a vinyl floor that was installed about a year and a half ago, and there's in a bathroom, and there's an area now where the when I step, the floor feels a little bit raised and it's kind of spongy. I don't know if the vinyl is separating from the material underneath or more serious.
Well, I'm wondering if you are getting a leak at the wax seal between the toilet and the thing, which oftentimes causes that.
Now, one thing I've noticed is that adjacent to the toilet for about 6 inches out, it's still very firm. So I was wondering, that was my first thought, was maybe the seal.
First floor or second?
It's on a second floor, a split bi-level house.
In other words, it isn't accessible from the bottom.
No, it's not.
Okay. You could be getting some moisture in there that has caused the subfloor to buckle a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know offhand what the source of moisture would be. One of the things we always tell people is do not caulk the joint between the toilet and the floor.
Right.
so that if we get a leak, we're aware of it, and it doesn't soak in and cause all kinds of problems we can't see otherwise.
Right. There's no caulking there.
Okay. And how about the joint between the vinyl and the tub?
There is a bead of caulk there.
And is that still solid there?
I don't know. I'll have to look at that. That's a good question. So there could be some water getting in by that edge and then running under
yes.
a little bit. Okay. Now, to get it, you know, if I decided it's a problem I need to deal with, what do I go to a flooring place to get that addressed, or what's the best way to get that repaired?
Well, it all depends what our cause is. It may be a flooring contractor might be necessary, yes.
Okay. And alternatively, what are my other...
Well, the other thing is, if you've got to take the whole thing up, the floor up, and replace the underlayment, we're looking at carpentry.
Yes, absolutely. Hopefully I don't need that. Okay, well, I'll look along that bead, and then I guess get maybe a start with a flooring person to maybe come in and help diagnose the problem.
All right,
probably
sounds good.
Way to go. Okay, thank you.
Thanks for the call.
Bye-bye.
We'll go next to a listener in Charleston on line number 4. Good morning.
Hello.
Yes.
Thank you. I have a range hood in the kitchen. They like to use the fan every once in a while, but it's extremely loud. Can you say anything, either pros and cons, of moving that fan up towards the other end of the vent? It does have a rectangular vent that goes all the way up to the roof.
Well, I have mine mounted on the roof.
Okay.
And, yes, that eliminates most of the noise problem.
Would you recommend using the same fan or just getting another? Sometimes
no, there's a special roof mount fan that you use for those.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate
okay.
it.
Okay, thanks for the call. We have a couple callers remaining, and maybe time for another if you'd like to join us real quick. 333-9455 around Champaign-Urbana. Elsewhere, 800-222-9455. Questions for Hank Spies. We'll go next to a listener in Mahomet on line number two. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have a hot water heater that I get about two short showers, and it's got cold water. So I think I need to replace it. And I was wondering if you had any suggestions as to some good brands, some of the better brands of hot water heaters.
It doesn't really make much difference, but what I'm really suspicious of is that the drop tube has fallen off. In other words, see, you're supposed to introduce the cold water at the bottom. So there is a connection at the top for the cold water and a tube that goes all the way to the bottom. And if that tube has fallen off, then the cold water is right up there next to the hot water outlet, and it significantly decreases the amount of hot water you can get out of there.
I see.
And they do make repair kits for pulling that thing out. We did have a couple of brands of water heaters that they tended to corrode off.
Okay.
And so that's a possibility. As far as the brand of water heater is concerned, it doesn't make that much difference. I remember when I used to go through the A.O. Smith plant, and they made 87 varieties of brands of water heaters, and they all came off the same line. The only difference was the decal on them.
Okay, well, that was a brand that I had heard of, but I didn't.
Yeah, A.O. Smith is good. State is good. As I say, there isn't that much difference in brands.
Okay. If I may ask you a real quick question, is there a lifetime on a sump pump? Mine's about 10 years old. It doesn't run a lot, but it does run. And what I would hate to see is that it quits when I'm out of here because we have a finished basement.
Mm-hmm. Well, you might want to consider a backup type sump pump, a second pump that would not cut in as long as the first one was working. And they do have those now. Are you on city water?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, they have water-powered backups. Now, we have lost electrical power for as long as a week due to ice storms.
Uh-huh.
We have never lost water pressure.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And they do now have water-powered backup sump pumps.
Okay. I didn't know about that. Thank you very much. That'll be very helpful.
Okay, thanks for the call.
Bye.
We have just about a minute left. We're going to squeeze in one last caller. We'll try to be quick, though. Line number three in Champaign. Good morning.
Hi. How difficult is it to change a electrical fuse box to a circuit breaker?
Well, it takes an electrician the better part of a half a day to do that. However, you should be aware that you can now buy screw-ins that look like a fuse but actually have a breaker built into them.
Oh.
So that you can press the button on that, and you're only looking at about $10 or $12 a piece for those.
Our insurance company said that this is a